When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Back to the West London Sport QPR podcast. A combination of holidays, timing issues, and let's be frank about it, apathy have led to a slight delay in getting back on the air. But here we are now to reflect on QPR's mixed start to the new season. As ever, I'm joined by former Rangers striker and captain Kevin Gallon, whose picture now adorns the new Loft Legends wall, which was unveiled on Saturday outside the Forever Isles bar and officially opened by Jerry Francis, head of the Ipswich game. Now, just a quick word, some real credit should be thrown out to all the hard work of QPR historian Chris Guy and Martin Percival, and also from the club, Dan Lowry and Matt Webb, who've done a magnificent job in getting the project over the line. It looks really impressive. And welcome back once again to Ben Kosky. Thanks for joining us, fellas.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay. Right. As I said, it has been a mixed start season, but I guess we'll start with the most recent match. Ipswich, a 1-0 defeat, a narrow 1-0 defeat now. Both you gents were there at the game, but I'll throw it to you first, Kev. What were your overall impressions of the performance?
One thing I would say is it was a great, lovely day, great crowd. The fans were out in force. Considering, recent results over the last year, I suppose. But, credit to the fans for coming out and showed real enthusiasm, real support for the team. Very good support. And the game, it was a decent game. Ipswich are a decent team. You don't get promoted from League One without being a decent team. You've got to have a good team to get promoted any division. So they're on a sort of a crest of a wave of, winning football matches and habits. And you could see they had good patterns of play and they knew what they were doing. We'd done some good things at times, but I think Ipswich, controlled the game slightly. Hit the post and it rolls across and hits the other side of the post and that goes in and it's a different game. That's where QPR are at the moment. But, I thought maybe a draw might have been a fair result. And to be honest, I would have took a draw at the start of the game because Ipswich have had a great start to the season. But it wasn't to be, and there's a lot of improvement needed in the next few weeks.
Ben, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd agree with Kev that a draw, I think, probably would have been about right. I felt it was pretty close. I felt when the fixtures came out, it was a bad time, or it was going to be a bad time to play Ipswich. As we've said, a team that has been with that sort of momentum they've had from last season, they've only lost one game since last Christmas. I mean, when you've got that sort of run going, you're going to be full of confidence. And I think... I would much rather have played a team like Leeds, who are on a bit of a downer at this stage. I think I was mostly encouraged, to be honest. I felt there was certainly more good things than not. And you look at the sort of the new lineup that's taking shape, and you feel there's certainly been strides made since last season. I think one of the things certainly that struck me is when Ipswich scored, you're looking at what's the attitude, what's the body language like among the Rangers players, because I think we both know towards the end of last season it was dreadful when a goal went in, and I felt it was a lot better. They gave it a bit of a go in those last 15 minutes plus however many there were added on, can't remember now. Didn't get the goal, but I felt there was a lot to be encouraged about. You don't want to lose at home. Sooner or later, of course, we haven't got another home game for a few weeks, but sooner or later that home record has got to improve, because as we know, last season, that was a major, major problem.
Yeah. I mean, it was a better showing. I mean, I was at Cardiff the week before, and that was, you know, decent enough. I mean, it couldn't be any worse than it was in the season opener. I mean, I think I said last year when QPR beat Bristol City at Ashton Gate that it was one of the best performances, or arguably the best away performance I've ever seen from a QPR team in the first half of the Watford game, the polar opposite to that, where I've never seen QPR that bad. It was a disgraceful performance. So, you know, the bar was so low, it couldn't get any worse than that. And, you know, the win at Cardiff, it was a hard-fought win, but it was deserved. And it's led to Gareth Ainsworth sort of making this big sort of announcements about changing the style and, you know, what he wants to do and that. And so it begs the question, Kevin, really. I mean, why did it take a 4-0 defeat at Watford for him to kind of do that? I mean, surely this is what you work on in pre-season and sort of look at what you've got.
I would say that had to have come from the players, either the senior players had to, because you don't go to Austria for 10 days and train two or three times a day on a particular style of football, and then when you lose your first game, just completely reverse it and go and try and play a different style that QPR have been playing for the last through Mark Warburton and Mick Beale and Critchley, a passing game. I mean, Gareth really would, I would say, I mean, if I'm trying to read his mind, he would like to play the way he plays at Wickham, that he did at Wickham, but he hasn't got the players for that at QPR. And you have to play, you've got to play a style of football that suits your players. And let's be fair, you know, you've got Ilias Chair, one of your better players. You don't play that style. You need to get him on the ball. You need a passing game. And I think, from what I would read behind the scenes, that there must have been words after that game against Watford, and the players have sort of got together and said, look, we need to play a more passing style of football. And that's what's happened. But also, I mean, I look at the stats from Saturday. We're at the home team. We have 38%. They have 62%. We need to get... If you've got to win football games consistently, if you're going to try and win football games consistently, you have to get that up to 50% at least, especially at home. You have to, you know, dominating the control of the game and dominating the ball to win football matches. I mean, you're going to win the odd game like we did against Cardiff and Burnley away, but, you know, that's just going to be the odd game here and there. You need to dominate the ball a little bit better and get up to the 50% possession. Have to, if you're going to be successful and stay in the division.
Yeah, I agree on that. And, you know, the thing that, I mean, we'll come on to my positives in a minute, but just, you know, they did lose the game, and I just felt, I mean, the goalkeeper, I'm not convinced that's a great signing, to be honest, but, you know, his distribution was abysmal in the last 20 minutes, and, you know, an experienced goalkeeper just kind of lofted it long up top to a young striker in his sort of second appearance at first team, who's, you know, likes the ball to his feet and expecting to win it in the air against kind of seasoned, you know, centre backs. And that was half the problem, really. You, coming straight back, and that's how why you're not.
Yeah, that's a major problem as well with Lyndon Dykes being injured. I mean, we've been doing this podcast for years, and I've said about the lack of strikers at the football club, and Lyndon Dykes is injured. And we're now relying on Sinclair Armstrong, the 20 years old, 21, who scored one goal in his career, and now a young lad who's never scored a goal in his career in the Championship. It's just the recruitment there has been just very, very poor, that we haven't got another striker, senior striker at the club. And they've got 2 weeks now to get one in, because at the end of the day, if Lyndon Dykes does get injured, which there's every possibility that he will. You know, is he going to be fit for the whole season? He might be, he might not be, but you're going into a season with like one senior striker and then 2 young lads. You need that. That needs to be rectified quickly.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at, I mean, the loan window is still open. I think that's the avenue they're going to have to go down. You know, but they do need, I mean, I don't know. The financial situation, we're told, is not great in terms of the financial fair play, so you can only work in the parameters you've got. But they release a lot of players in the summer, and the squad's a lot smaller, and it's not a better squad than it was last year. So he's got, you know, I'm not saying he's got one hand tied behind his back, but with just, as you say, the lack of strikers, it's going to be very difficult to win games of football. What your thoughts on that, Ben? I know you're not a huge fan of rushing out and just buying for the sake of buying, but I know you must sort of be on the similar thoughts of Kevin, that, you know, we need to bring a couple more bodies in.
I think, as Kevin said, we've talked about this for years, and the lack of strikers or not having enough of them. I would certainly be in favour of trying to bring someone in up front, partly for the reasons that have already been outlined, but also because I'm always a believer in that you should certainly have the option of playing 2 up front at times. And you certainly can't play 2 up front if you've only got, you know, 2 or 1 to start with. So you have to have, if you're including Sinclair Armstrong as a first team striker, which I think they certainly are, you've got to have a third person alongside him and Linda Dykes as an option, without a doubt. As you say, it is going to be, that there's going to need to be some kind of room there financially. And of course, as always, a lot of it may depend on people going out as much as coming in, because if someone is going out in the next couple of weeks, that gives you some more options. But I would certainly like to see someone come in who plays up front, and ideally, of course, someone who offers some different quality to what Lyndon Dykes or Sinclair Armstrong does, because I think for me that's always the key, is have you got attacking players who offer you different things in a different game situation, maybe when you need someone to come off the bench and do a job. I mean, we're going back a few years, but it's funny how often I hear people say, you know, we could really do with having a Matt Smith player. You know, so someone who can come off the bench in certain situations, just do the job of win the ball, make a nuisance of themselves in the box. I'm not saying necessarily there needs to be a Matt Smith clone coming in, but I think it just underlines the point. You need people who will give you different to what you've already got. In terms of people coming in, I think probably most would say that is probably the most pressing concern. And then it depends, you know, where else you look in the squad. I mean, I've heard people talk about needing another person in defence. I've got to say, for me, I look at central midfield and I just think they're a bit light there in terms of personnel. If you look at it from last season, there's 3 central midfielders have left, Johansson, Amos and Tim Arubinam, who went back to Aston Villa, and just 1 has come in, Jack Colback. So for me, although you've got people like Stephen Duke McKenna, who you would think is going to get minutes and gain an experience, but for me, that's an area, again, I would be looking at thinking, have we got enough options here for the season?
Yeah, I think what you say about the bench is very, very fair point. You have to look at it and say, I mean, particularly now you're getting games more often than not are going to be 100, 105 minutes with the new rulings on extra time and injury time and that. And I think, you know, if you go back 2 years ago, you know, when Mark Warburton signed Andre Gray and they also had Charlie Austin and Dykes, and you know, you wouldn't say it was an overriding success, but it wasn't a disaster either, because, you know, Andre Gray came off the bench three or four times in one game for QPR, whereas Charlie Austin came off the bench, having that sort of depth and been out of the change yet. But as you say, Dykes picked up that knee injury. You don't know how, we don't really know how bad that is, because they like to keep these things under their, very close to their chest. QPR nowadays, they don't like to say how bad an injury is, so we don't know how long he's out for. And then you see in Sinclair Armstrong basically run himself into the ground and just on 60 minutes go down like he's been shot, just with cramp. And I mean, I know, Kev, we've discussed this sort of off air, that's a little bit of a worry, isn't it?
Well, I've said this before, Ian. It's the thing with Sinclair Armstrong, he's a big lad. He's, I mean, for want of a better, he's like muscle bound, and he play, everything he does is 100 mile an hour, as in he never sort of, when the ball comes to him, he doesn't just lay it off, simple, everything's sort of a bit of a fight with the centre half, and that's his power, and that's his strength. His strength is his strength, which is obviously his power and his pace. And nothing, everything he does is 100 mile an hour and 100%. And to do that for 90, well, now it's, like you said, 100 minutes. That's, you have to be fit as. And it's a little bit of a worry that a lot of the players are going down with cramp. Because they've had a whole pre-season. They went to Austria for 10 days. And I see the game. I went to the Norwich game, and a few of the lads, I think Albert Adoma had cramp. Stevie Duke McKenna had cramp. So it's a bit of a slight concern. But regarding Sinclair Armstrong, he needs to be more economical with his play, because to play 100 minutes, 100 mile an hour is tough, and he needs to, like I said, needs to lay the ball off and move and. Not everything has to be a fight every time you get the ball with the centre half, and he done well.
You think that's something you learn as you get more experience. I mean, you're a young player coming into the side.
Well, that's the thing, enthusiasm. Ben. We've discussed this before, where really in for Sinclair Armstrong's development, he really, I think, really should have been definitely on loan last season to a League One or League Two team and learning his trade, and maybe even this season, but because of the predicament that QPR are in with lack of strikers, they have to use him. But for his development, he probably should be at a League One team now for till January, learning his trade. And but we're in this situation where he's, Linda Dykes is injured, and he's pretty much the first team striker at the moment.
He was good on Saturday. I mean, he's exciting to watch. I mean, that run down the line, it was he had to get the crowd out of his seat. There's a real sort of buzz when he's on the ball. And there was times on Saturday where Ipswich was just petrified of him. They didn't know what to do. It was really sort of, you know, grown men, if you want, for a better word, just sort of being absolutely, you know, looking bereft of ideas about how do you stop him? He's just running through people. But as you say, physically, that takes its toll. You know, you're going to war every game with the centre-back. It's not going to, you know. And perhaps, I mean, is that something, is that a coaching thing, do you think? Is that someone just sort of saying, I'm not taking away what you do? But, I mean, I did Chelsea West Ham yesterday and saw, you know, Mikel Antonio kind of, you know, scored a brilliant goal, bullied the Chelsea defence. And I sort of looked at him and thought, well, that's sort of what you want Armstrong to be when he gets older and better. But Antonio doesn't run around like Armstrong does. He's sort of, he's a bit more, you know, I suppose, economical in his, in what he does. And, you know, there's good sides to that and bad sides to that. But, I mean, in terms of, Kev, do you think with Sinclair, is it just coaching or finessing? Or is something he'll learn when...
It's a little bit of coaching. It's also game experience and learning on the job, really. The more you play, the more you learn. There's no better coaching than actually playing 3 o'clock on a Saturday. That's the best coaching you can get.
But having like senior sort of centre backs, if you want, like Steve Cook, who's been around, seen it. I mean, I'm sure he's talking to him and telling him things as well. I mean, did you find that when you were a young player? You know, you always think like strikers learn from strikers, but did you ever sort of learn from Alan McDonald, Danny Maddox, these types of players about?
Well, you sort of, when you train against them, you're sort of learning as well when you're training up against them. But they would never sort of say anything. But the best way is like I said, game experience, playing 3 o'clock, also watching. Go and watch, you know, before I got into the first team, I'd be at QPR every 3 o'clock, every Saturday, watching Les Ferdinand, Bradley Allen, Gary Penrose, Roy Wakeley, be watching what they did. And you sort of try and if you try and copy them, that's what I did anyway. And then we had a really good reserve coach at the time, Roger Cross, and he was a very good striker coach. And he would, I was very lucky in those days is that, in the afternoons, he would say to the youth team, we're going out and training in the afternoon, and basically would be striker training. And it was perfect for me and strikers. So that was good as well. I had a really good coach and Roger Cross to learn from, and like little movements and stuff of what to do when you're old. So always, this is, I'm going to go get a bit technical here, but if the centre half has the ball, the midfielder has the ball, and you want the ball to feet, I would always sort of stand behind the defender. So, and then if the defender sees me behind him, he then goes behind me. And as soon as he goes behind me, then I would come in front to get the ball to feet. So you need these little movements. And if you want the ball in behind, you go short and then spin. So you take the defender in and he thinks, oh, he's coming to feet, and then you spin over the top. So you need these little movements. And I was lucky to have a coach who taught me that at a very young age. It was like 14, 15. These are the movements. And it took me years to know how to do it. Because when he first told me when I was 15, 16, I was like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. But by the time you get into game experience and, like I said, and playing, it just becomes second nature.
Now, you spoke to Sinclair after the Cardiff game, and you know, he's a really a good lad, a very humble lad, and you know, you really root for him. But he said when he was at Shamrock Rovers, he was coached by Damien Duff, former Ireland, Chelsea and Fulham winger, you know, superb player in his own right. And he said to him, like, the only way you're going to make it at football, you have to be obsessed by the game, you have to watch as much as you can. He sort of said that he watches strikers, he watches football, the vibe, he's very sort of obsessed by the game. I mean, how important is that for him? Because you know, a lot of players now, they play the game, they're very good at it, but they wouldn't say they're kind of fans of the game. How important is that kind of for him to, you know?
I think it's important for any young lad that they should be watching as much football on the telly, going to matches if you're not playing, watch as much as you can. I really do. I think if you want a career out of football. But then there's some people who don't watch but are natural football players, and it's just, this is my job, and they just know what to do. But me personally, watch as much as you can. And I would recommend that to any young player at QPR or any young player anywhere. Watch football. If you want to be a football, if you're centre forward, go and watch Harry Kane. Just go and watch him. I know he's in Germany now, but when he was there, go and watch him. Do what it should. And you go and watch Harry Kane live, it's completely different to watch him on the telly. And then you give it, oh my God, what a player he is live.
Yeah.
The technique and the movement and just the basics. He can, if you can get, as any footballer, right, we'll talk about Sinclair, if you can get the basics, really good, you sort it. I'm not talking about taking people on, but receiving the ball, holding it, laying it, moving. Get them right, you got a great chance of having a career in football.
Now, we've obviously discussed the you know, there isn't much money for QPR to spend, but would you, if an offer was to come in for Ilias Chernow, you'd have to kind of think about taking it, wouldn't you? I mean, he's probably QPR's best player and someone that you could get some money for. I mean,
it's just the case that is in. Yeah, you've got to look at it, but you have to have replacements in line. Do you know what I mean? It's not selling him. Oh, what are we going to do? What we're going? There has to be some backup plan. We sell him. We'll go and get hit. We might go and get two or three. You know what I mean? Get a centre forward. Get another attacking midfielder. Benson, another actual midfielder. Well, I mean, what's happening with Willock? I mean, it's just a strange one.
Mm.
I mean, he gets taken off on Saturday at half-time. I mean, I've had that done to me, and that is not a nice feeling, getting taken off at half-time.
He said he was gassed. He was cooked by half-time, which, again, comes back to question about the fitness, isn't it?
Really?
I mean, you at least give him 55 minutes, didn't you? 55.
Because it looks it's like, unless you're injured, but getting taken off at half-time is, like, for your... I got taken off half time once by Ray Harford. I wanted to kill him. It's embarrassing, and it sort of feels like it's your fault that you're losing, or you're not doing it. It's your fault. I'm taking you off at half time. It's not a good one. And the reason I'm saying about Willock is, you know, if you're not, what was the point of giving him that extra year if you're not going to play him? He's just taking up money from maybe someone else to come in. I don't understand it, to be honest.
I mean, there's a lot of mixed messaging coming out there. He's sort of saying, Ainsworth, that, you know, I want him here, he's part of my plans, but he does seem to be the kind of poor guy that he doesn't want to, you know, take him off, he won't pick him, he won't leave him on the bench. And there's obviously, you know, I just think he doesn't fancy him, to be honest. That's how I see it.
It looks that way. I mean, if you're saying he's not fit, okay. Why don't you play him against Norwich then to get some fitness?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, 100%.
And then, you know, against Watford, bring him on for 2 minutes. What for? It's a strange one because this time, it's a very strange one, isn't it? This time last year, he was one of the best players in the Championship, and I've never seen form drop off so rapidly. Off a cliff, really.
I was going to say, Ian, I think you're almost struggling. You're struggling to know how to interpret that 45-minute appearance. Is it trying to reintegrate him into the team, or is it trying to put him in the shop window? It's a very curious one. I mean, I certainly feel if there are offers out there for Chris Willock, I think, you know, he's likely to be on his way, because that final year or this, you know, extra year of the contract we're talking about, it was an automatic clause. So I think, in a sense, they might ideally have not wanted to do that, but were sort of committed to it. So and I think also, you know, we talked about what would happen if there's an offer for Ilias Chair. I think at the moment, certainly if you ask most QPR fans, you know, would you rather lose Ilias Chair or Chris Willock at this stage? That they're going to say Chris Willock, because they will see Chair certainly as a player who's still firing at somewhere near to full capacity, and Willock, for whatever reason, hasn't been doing that for quite a while. I think the other, you know, we talked about having a plan if someone goes, and again, you look at that area of the field. I'm not saying that they're necessarily is the depth of quality of those sort of attacking players that play off a striker or wide, but there are now quite a few of them. You have people like Dixon Bonner coming to the squad. You have Taylor Richards, who again has been a bit of a mystery as to why he hasn't played more. But those are all people who operate in that area of the field, and so in terms of looking at options you've got, you'd say that if someone was to go from that area, then, you know, you're not going to be completely short without them, so to speak.
Looking ahead to the weekend, it's obviously a very difficult trip to Southampton on Saturday. I mean, Kev, you've played in struggling QPR teams when you're up against sort of like the big, strong teams that are fancy to be in the mix. I guess this time of year is probably the best time to play them, the start of the season.
Well, they've got some good players. They've obviously sold some players, so they've got money in the bank to, you know, comply with FFP and also maybe make some signings. I think it's, look, Southampton will try and dominate possession the way that they have done with Russell Martin's teams with Swansea, and they keep the ball. Don't know. Sometimes I think they keep possession just for the sake of it. But it's going to be a tough game, and I would say the tactics for QPR will be similar to what they did against Burnley away last season, where sit deep and counter-attack. And that's where it suits Sinclair Armstrong. I think away from home suits him better because the counter-attack and the spacing behind, win the ball and try and release him with his pace and power. So that suits him. I think playing away suits Sinclair Armstrong better than sort of playing at home if you were trying to dominate. But saying that, we had 38 possession at home on Saturday, so it's a tough one. They're a good team. They've got some good players. They've had a good start to the season. But I would take a draw right now, if you ask me. But you never know.
Ben?
Yeah, I think, again, Southampton have, you know, they've shown already this season. They've got a bit of resilience about them. I think I'm right in saying the three games they've played so far, they've been ahead and then pulled back to 1-1 and come back to win. Or I think the one against Norwich, they came back several times to get a 4-4 draw. So that suggests to me they've got kind of a good kind of character in the side. Even if you go ahead against them, they're going to come back at you. And, you know, again, perhaps, though, we said Ipswich, maybe not the team you wanted to play at this stage of the season. Maybe a team that's come down is one that is more suited. And I think, as Kev has said, some players we've got, the style away from home might suit them a bit better. So I think, you know, certainly not inconceivable to get something out of that. And I'd be honest, I didn't actually hear Kev's prediction, so I'm not going to.
I'll take a draw. I took a draw right now.
You'll take a draw. Well, right. I'm going to echo you then and say I take a draw, and I think it's not inconceivable to get one if they play really well.
Yeah, so I can't see it happening, to be honest. I think Russell Martin is played at QPR plenty of times. He knows all about QPR. He's coached against Gareth Ainsworth in League One with MK Don. So, you know, I just think that they'll have too much of QPR, especially down at home. I think I'll give them a chance of maybe getting a squeak if they can keep it tight. But if they concede early, then there's a good chance that Southampton could win this quite comfortably. So, I'm going to go for a 3-1 to Southampton. Pains me to say it, but it's, you know, they started the season quite well, to be fair. They had a good win at Plymouth and on Saturday, and Plymouth were flying. I think, to be honest, I think when Leicester are going to walk away with this division, I think it would be very similar to what Burnley did last year with those two. So we shall see. Well, thanks very much for joining us, boys. And hopefully we won't be as delayed in getting a podcast out for next week. And hopefully we're talking about some cheerier news. But thanks for joining us. And as I always say, please subscribe on YouTube if you can and give us a like and all those nice things. And I'll see you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.